Welcome to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answers. I'm your host, Dr. Ronit Lev, an emergency and addiction doctor who has served at the White House and still practices on the front lines. Right here on High Truths, you will learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. To grow this community of information and action, I hope you give us a five-star review. Come visit me on hightruths.com to learn more about the show or download a free prescription for naloxone. Carrying naloxone for drugs is like carrying an EpiPen for allergies. Today's episode is sponsored by Families Against Fentanyl. FAF is an organization set on attacking the supply chain of deadly illicit fentanyl. To learn more, visit familiesagainstfentanyl.org and sign their petition to declare illicit fentanyl a weapon of mass destruction. Hello again, High Truth listeners. Get ready for a drug-endangered children conversation. I'm your host, Dr. Ronit Lev. Drug-endangered children, as in 1 in 8 children, live with one or more caregivers with a substance use disorder in the United States. Millions of children and families are affected by parental or caregiver legal or illegal substance misuse today. 759,000 children experience a parental death due to drugs from 1999 to 2000. In a recent High Truth episode with investigative reporter Lori Jane Gliha, we talked extensively about babies and young children poisoned by fentanyl. They were examples of drug-endangered children. Every DEC, or drug-endangered child, has a fork in the road that can affect the trajectory of their life. The child can end up in a life of drugs and crime or a life of health, purpose, and productivity. If we can identify children at risk, and the earlier the better, and give them the proper intervention and love, we can make a great impact on the future generation of Americans. J.D. Vance, our vice president, is an example of a drug-endangered child. He received intervention as well as love from his grandmother that changed his life. I would hope every child in America receives that type of care and opportunity. The National Alliance on Drug-Endangered Children focuses on providing help, hope, and support to communities and children at risk. To learn more about drug-endangered children, I reached out to Eric Nation. Eric Nation is the executive director of the National Alliance on Drug Endangered Children, DEC. He spent over 20 years in the field of law enforcement, and as a lieutenant, he led a large successful drug task force and started a countywide Drug Endangered Children Alliance. He has now taken that mission nationwide. He provides training and education to law enforcement and other professionals on substance misuse and impact on children. To learn more about Eric Nation and the National Alliance for Drug Endangered Children, check out the High Truth show notes. I recorded this conversation with Eric on May 9th, 2025. Eric Nation, welcome to High Truths.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lev, for having me. What an honor to be here.
No, I'm glad to have this important conversation. And before I ask you about yourself, I want to ask you about your background. What about all these hands and QR codes? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so to start with the hands, we had this dream at our 2023 conference that we wanted to highlight the children that were being impacted by substance misuse. We see a lot of the faces of the victims and things like that, but what we have never really seen is the children that are impacted on a regular basis around substance misuse. So we had all of our attendees write a name and their state where they were from about a drug endangered child that they had encountered or worked with. And it became our background for our 2023 conference down in Kansas City, Missouri.
Wow, very nice. So Eric, you started your career in law enforcement, and tell us about your journey and how you came to working on protecting children.
Absolutely. So I did start my career in law enforcement. I began my career back in the early 90s when I started working in the jail or the correctional side of law enforcement. I spent a few years there, and then I went to the academy. And in the academy, I was sponsored by a local police department that was pretty rural, pretty small, and got my certification. I then went to the sheriff's office, at which point I worked on the street for a little bit, doing patrol, and then I moved my way to the detective division and worked undercover narcotics for about 6 years, and did all my undercover work in a metro area. And then as I did my rotation and got promoted, I worked my way up through the ranks. And when you do that, you have to go back to patrol for a little bit. And then I finished my career as a lieutenant commanding a multi-jurisdictional drug task force. And along my journey in law enforcement, I was very fortunate to attend a Drug Endangered Children conference down in Kansas City, Missouri, actually about halfway through my career. I was about 12 years into my career at that point. And it was a conference that, I have to be honest with you, I really didn't understand why I was going. I was asked by a very dear friend to attend this conference that he wanted to start a Drug Endangered Children Alliance in our community. So I actually went down there. I was encouraged by somebody I had met there that was actually a pediatric nurse practitioner, that I should go watch a session that was being done by a behavioral health therapist by the name of Nick Taylor. And this would not be the normal session for me to attend as law enforcement, going to a behavioral health session, just because I was the guy that always wanted to do the law enforcement sessions. I went to this session, and Nick Taylor could see that I was not an engaged attendee, and respectfully called me out in front of the crowd and asked me a simple question. And that question was, number one, he started it off with, what do you do for a living? I told him I was in law enforcement. He then followed that question up with, do you not think that you play a part in changing the trajectory of children's lives? And I have to be honest with you, that question made me speechless. I had never thought about that before. Could I play a part in changing the trajectory of children's lives? Because that wasn't my focus when I was in law enforcement. I was all about the arrest, the asset forfeitures, the gun seizures, the statistics. And what I was missing is the victims of substance misuse. He really got my brain going. And when I went back home, I became very determined that I was going to start a Drug Endangered Children Alliance in our local community. And I started doing that. We made great success. It changed our community in a positive way on how we looked at drugs and drug use. And that fostered into me doing some contract work with National DEC, training about my experience, my aha moment, and then that transitioning into me becoming their director of training and development. And as of 9 months ago, becoming their executive director.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I've seen this happen to people in public safety and law enforcement, where you have a career where you're putting bad guys away, but that has a human toll on you. And in retirement, you're working on prevention and doing amazing, really public health work from your public safety career.
Absolutely. Yeah. I have to tell you, this is the first time in my life that I actually feel like I'm giving back, right? When I came to National DEC, that was my thing. I wanted to give back to the children and the families and the communities that I had missed through a large portion of my law enforcement career.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you also for doing that. So I thought now we would define the problem and start with some definitions. So what does it mean? What's a drug endangered child?
So that's a great question. And we define drug endangered children as children who are at risk of suffering physical or emotional harm as a result of legal and or illegal drug use, possession, manufacturing, cultivation. But keep in mind, they also may be children whose caretakers' legal and illegal substance misuse interferes with the caretaker's ability to parent and provide a safe, nurturing environment. So we really, when we define drug endangered children, we're talking about legal and illegal substances, because all of it can impact these children and the environment that they are living in.
Right. So that means prescription drugs or marijuana or psychedelics or fentanyl.
Absolutely. You've just named them all. We're talking from marijuana to methamphetamine, alcohol to heroin, right? Psychedelics to prescription drugs. They all have an impact, right, on the children and our caregiver and parents' ability to provide that safe, nurturing environment at times.
Okay, that's good. So I missed alcohol with that, besides that, so that was important.
Yes.
How big a problem is this?
Well, I think it's a massive problem, but I don't think there's data out there supporting how big the problem is. I can tell you the data that we do see is we know 8.7 million children live in a household where at least one parent has a substance use disorder. We know that almost two-thirds, one-third to two-thirds of maltreatment cases that go to child welfare have substance use involved to some degree. I think my biggest concern about how big the problem is, and we aren't identifying it, is around the opioid epidemic. We have heard for years about the data of, the 107, 105,000 overdose fatalities that occur in the United States. And then we talk about the 653,000 non-fatal overdoses. When you start asking the question of how many children are impacted, we don't have the answer to that. And I think that is my biggest concern is how can we miss the most vulnerable population that is actually 100% of our future? Why are we not focusing on that portion as well?
It's interesting because we do have data on pediatric opioid deaths, but those are just a tip of the iceberg, probably because every death has, probably hundreds of kids are being exposed, but they just didn't die.
Absolutely. And what about the trauma that we don't talk
And that's just
about?
opioids, right?
Right. That's just opioids. And what about the trauma we don't talk about? What if we see, using the opioid epidemic, what if we see a parent or a caregiver overdose? Are we even looking for children? Are we looking for signs of children?
Well, we should.
We absolutely
We
should.
should. Yes.
When we administer Narcan, here's another one that I've been asking for. When we administer Narcan, are we making part of that data collection identification of kids?
Yeah, we're not.
Are kids present? Are kids not present? Are there
Yeah.
signs of children?
Right. And we learned something very important is that kids who are in a household where there is fentanyl used can be positive for fentanyl. And one of the things that we did to educate our community is if there's a death, not an overdose, we didn't get that far, but if there's a death from fentanyl, any children in that household should go be tested because they could be at risk.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm glad you're talking about that because, we have a lot of opioid fatality review teams out there. We have been doing a lot of work with a lot of the communities and recognizing that through these opioid fatality reviews or even non-fatality reviews, our question is, are you identifying children that are being impacted in these situations? And the sad truth is, no, the answer is not a lot of communities are doing that. So we've actually made the intersection where we are taking our Drug Endangered Children alliances and creating opioid fatal and non-fatal review teams as a spin-off of those DEC alliances. So the children are being thought of as well through those reviews and those timelines.
Wow, that's important. We need to get that in every community. I probably need to do something about my community to get that going as well. Are there specific communities at risk or populations at risk?
So again, Dr. Lev, I love that you asked that question because I would say every community is unique, right? And every population is unique. But I truly believe in the work that we are doing, they are all at risk. How much risk for what? What drugs are they at risk for? What are we seeing? That all differs. But we do work in rural communities, we do work in tribal communities, we do work in urban communities, And the children are all being impacted the same. It's just, maybe the drugs are different, the substances are different, but really the impact is pretty consistent. Volume-wise, that changes with population, but we're not really seeing one or the other. We're seeing that all the children are being impacted.
Interesting. And I want to ask like what an impact, what that means, but there's also in 2007 you shared materials that there is a Drug Endangered Act. What is that act?
So there was actually in 2007, Congress passed the Drug Endangered Children Act. It was around the meth lab days. We both can remember those, right? Where we did a lot of work around understanding that children in meth labs were endangered, right? They were at high risk of safety and stuff like that. So there was
Yeah,
actually some.
I think you said it all started with an explosion
Yeah. So
of a meth lab, and three children died.
Kathy Lynn James in 1995 in the state of California, where there was an explosion that occurred and three children died. Absolutely. That is the case where Drug Endangered Children efforts started. And in 2007, Congress passed the act. The problem was is when they felt like methamphetamine was going down and the numbers were going down, the funding stopped around it as well. And the act went dormant. It has never been re-looked at. And that is some of the efforts that I'm trying to do today is what does it take to reestablish this act or get this back going? Because we need to be the advocates for these children, because children are being impacted just as much as they were back in the methamphetamine days.
So was this act ever, active?
It was active for about 2 years that there was some funding placed around this act, and it was to assist children living with parents and guardians that were experiencing substance use, but the funding was not sustained following those 2 years.
Interesting. But yet your work goes on.
Our work goes on. The other thing that we're really trying to bring up is following that act, they started in 2010, the United States Department of Justice started the Federal Interagency Task Force on Drug Endangered Children, the Federal DEC Task Force. And that was in response to the administration's National Drug Control Policy back in 2010. And really what it did was bring a lot of disciplines and professionals together to really look at the impact on children. But again, when methamphetamine went away, the Federal DEC Task Force went away as well.
Oh, interesting. That's too bad because that work is important, regardless, like you said, whether it's meth or fentanyl or any drug.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I want to talk, if you could share some cases to really understand how children are affected, how when they're drug endangered, and what interventions can be made. Recently, I had a podcast with Lori Jane Gliha. She's a reporter, and she's been tracing all these pediatric fentanyl poisoning, kids who have died or even survived from fentanyl. And you're thinking, wow, if they died, that affects people, but even if they lived, the kind of environment, how are children affected? But perhaps you could share some stories about that.
So I always like to share some of the positive stories, right?
Yeah.
And the because we quite often paint the picture around the bad stories, and there's plenty of them out there. And I agree. And I would just like to. So we talked quite a bit about a success story that we had have seen, and this one was actually out of the state of Kansas, and it actually was an 18-month-old. 18-month-old kid was actually found in the ditch after his mother had killed his father. And both were in active addiction at the time. It played a factor in the crime. And this kid was found. And back in the day, we were not seeing a lot of great DEC efforts, Drug Endangered Children efforts. And this child went through 19 foster homes and started getting into drug use and stuff like that as a teenager. Finally, this kid met a family where they were all about that resiliency and that recovery. And he found this family that really wanted to help him and offered to get him into treatment and help this child. And they did. With the encouragement of his girlfriend at the time, he did get involved in treatment and is in recovery and successful recovery for many, many years now. But as he grew up and he entered this, he became a high school student, right? And then he graduated. And what he was used to was, okay, my time here is done. It's time for me to move on. And he had made that announcement to his foster parents at the time and said, hey, I've graduated. I'm going to move on. Well, his foster parents had hope, right? I love to use the word hope. Had hope and had offered that, hey, just because you graduated from high school doesn't mean you're done. Would you like to go to college? And they encouraged this foster child to go to college, in which he did. And then after college, he was like, all right, well, thank you for all your help, all your support. I need to move on. And they're like, do you want to get your master's degree? Do you want to move on in your education? And I think you're seeing this, Dr. Lev, is this family came to support him, right? We're talking about the PACEs, the positive childhood experience, instead of the adverse childhood experiences that are being provided by one family. And he ended up going and getting his master's degree. And I have to be honest with you, he is a caring husband. He's a caring father. And we know him. He is doing successful work and stuff. So I think
I would say that's more than hope. That was love, because this family went beyond what they were paid to do as foster parents.
Absolutely. So I think when we talk about the success stories, or even the other ones, is one of our biggest things is identifying these kids. You will hear me, if you've ever heard me present before and talk about this, children are often the forgotten ones. They are the first impacted, whether it be by substance use, substance misuse, the trauma that comes with it, the exposures that come with it. They're often the first impacted and the last ones to ever receive services and to get that support. And we have this program with our Tennessee Alliance for Drug Endangered Children. And down in Scott County, they have a program called Girls Thrive. And if you have time, I'd love to read you this letter from one of the girls that is a drug endangered child that she wrote to me and to us from Girls Thrive. Can I read it to you?
Yeah. Tell us what Girls Thrive is and then read it to us.
Absolutely. So Girls Thrive is a spinoff of a local DEC Alliance coming out of Tennessee. So Scott County DEC Alliance in Tennessee. And what they have done is they created services for the children. And what they do is this youth camp, or a youth get together for girls, where the girls that are drug endangered children come and gather and are able to kind of hang out together, do some peer-to-peer recovery together, do some activities, really fostering positive relationships and positive things for these children that have come from environments where they're lacking that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's really providing effort at a local level using the DEC mission to really foster these girls' lives. And this girl wrote this letter, and she says, as a girl, my mother never kept her promises. She would tell me she would come to see me, and I would sit on the porch for hours waiting for her to come and pull up in the driveway. But minutes turned into hours, and hours turned into days. My hope faded. The nasty hatred replaced it. For years, I hated her. I couldn't understand why she broke her promise. When hating her didn't fix anything, I then began to blame myself. I asked myself why I wasn't good enough for her. What was wrong with me? I became consumed by the hate inside me. I sat with my stomach knotting, feeling for years, because I convinced myself that this was the normal. Then one day I asked myself, why is this normal? Why do I live like this? Hating her did not change anything. All it did was make me miserable. The longer I hated her, the longer the little girl sat on the porch steps. And then she gives out a shout out. Girls Thrived helped me understand that I wasn't the problem, and neither was my mother. She had been through her own set of struggles. It helped me understand that her hardships are not an excuse, but an explanation. It has truly changed my life. And Dr. Lab, those are the things that we're looking for, is providing the hope to the children. But we can't provide that hope if we don't identify them and if we don't start intervening in their lives as soon as possible. These children are all over the United States in every community.
So if I make a, do you have like a criteria? What is, you know, like, just because there's an alcoholic in the family, do they meet criteria, or do they have to be emotionally abused in some way? Or
so I go to all children are drug endangered children. Whether you live in a home where substance misuse is occurring, or you live in a community where substance misuse has been accepted, you don't have to have a parent or a caregiver in order to be a drug endangered child. If the community has made it so socially acceptable, I believe that as professionals, we all need to keep an eye on these children. And is there a criteria? No, I think it's about the early identification. Do we have a child that's struggling? Do we have a child that's truant? Do we have a child that's using? Do we have a child that's committing petty theft? Do we have a child that is not showing up for appointments or shows up to school being late? This is where the DEC approach and the DEC efforts come together, that all disciplines and all community members have to rally to identify these children that are struggling, and what can we do to support them.
So you're interviewing once there's a problem, not before there's a problem. I think that the stories that Lori Jane was sharing on a podcast about pediatric poisonings of fentanyl in children were toddlers that were exposed, or, you know, really young children. So they're not at a point in their life where they can be truant or not show up at appointments, right?
You know, we do identify them. I would tell you, as law enforcement or fire and EMS, we have the opportunity to identify these children. If we're at a home where substance misuse of any kind is occurring, and we see that these children are being impacted by that, we can identify them. And if that's identified, we should call our community partners, whether it be child welfare or service providers in our communities, to try to get them services as soon as possible and do what we can. So we have fire and EMS identifying kids as infants. We're identifying children as early as the mother is still carrying them, right? That they can make the choice to use or not use, and providing the resources around all of that.
Yeah. That is so important. We want to prevent kids from having such a problem, and we want to identify kids at risk and make an early intervention, because you intervene early, you can have a normal life, just like the example that you said of the young man who was, you know, found in a ditch and now ended up, you know, as a master's graduate with a family and a job and a wonderful life.
And doing great things, right? Doing great things.
Giving back.
Yeah, giving back. Yeah. Absolutely.
So NADEC, if that's how you say it, the National Association of Drug Endangered Children, tell us, what is it? What do you do? What is it? You know, how big is the organization? Is it something available to all communities?
Absolutely. So NADEC. Is an acronym that we use, National DEC. Our real name is the National Alliance for Drug Endangered Children. We, like I said, the effort started back in 1995 around the Kathy Lynn James. We became a nonprofit back in 2006. And what we do is we recognize that we had to change with the times as well, right? As it started back in the meth lab days, we had a change with times too, which included the legalization of some drugs, as well as the misuse of legal drugs. And we also started recognizing the harsh reality that when substance misuse infiltrates a home, the children are oftentimes that first impacted and the last ones to receive services. But these children are exposed to trauma. They're exposed to neglect, they're exposed to instability and the dangers before many of us outside of the home ever have the chance to see them. So our efforts, we believe every community should have a drug endangered children approach response. Does that make sense? Where the community comes together, disciplines come together to identify and intervene and at least make children a part of this conversation. Because our ultimate goal, our vision is 100% safe children, families, and communities free of that negative impact. We are the National Alliance for Drug Endangered Children. We have DEC efforts in all 50 states across the United States. We work with primarily state, tribal, and local alliances. We have found out that a lot of our alliances get embedded into existing coalitions, like drug-free communities and existing coalitions where the drug endangered children efforts and the approach become part of the narrative and use our approach around common vision, ongoing collaboration, and ongoing change to really help mold the community's approach to these children. Every community looks different, right? Local communities have local solutions. And what might work in Mat-Su Valley, Alaska, might not work in Miami-Dade County, Florida, and vice versa. So we really have to look at it and let the community understand, and we do, what their needs are. We help them through that as the National Alliance. We help them with this process, but we also partner with some great partners. Look at this, we're on high truce with you, Lev, and we have the opportunity to get this out there. We work with the National Criminal Justice Training Center. We work with DEA, the Community Outreach. We work with the Crimes Against Children Research Center at the University of New Hampshire around getting some data. You know, but we also work with like ILLUNA and SAM and the National Prevention Networks, because this is prevention, and if we can work, get prevention to adopt this model with us, it allows us that avenue that has already been created, and we just bring a different thing. And we have other partners like TASC and IAR, and one of our promising practices that we partner with in a lot of communities is Lamy Learns About Addiction. It is a book and a bunny stuffed animal that comes in a packet where it talks about...
Say the name of the character again. Lamy?
Lamy?
Rammy.
Lamy Learns About Addiction.
Okay.
And things aren't always as it appears, because you probably think that Lamy is a lamb, but it's not. It's a bunny. And that's part of the book. And if you look on our website and stuff, you will see the author reading the story, Lamy Learns About Addiction. And it really just encourages kids to understand that it's not their fault. And things aren't always as it appears. Like, you have a lot of stuff going on. So we work with a lot of partners. We work with a lot of existing multidisciplinary teams, a lot of coalitions, a lot of child protection teams of embedding the DEC approach model into those existing alliances. And if they don't have one, we create our own. And we start a DEC alliance, and we work with our partners to bring in their efforts as well.
Wow, very important. I noticed in the materials that you gave me, they also had COPS, community-oriented policing services, and I'm wondering if that is another partner?
Yeah, so we are very fortunate to have been funded from the COPS organization. They have helped us develop a lot of our promising practice and our guidebooks that are published. They also helped us fund some free online training. But just like BJA is a funder of ours through federal grants, and OJJDP is also
a bunch of acronyms that we don't know what they mean.
sorry. COPS is Community Oriented Policing Services, like you said. They are a federal grantee or grantor. And then BJA is Bureau of Justice Assistance. They are actually helping us right now create a virtual reality training. That is going to show the perspective through the life of a child. So we're in the middle of developing this training that is going to be able to show the life of a child from a child's perspective and provide empathy, so we maybe respond differently. And then OJJDP is Office of Juvenile Justice Programs, and they're actually funding us currently to create Drug Endangered Children Alliances, starting those opioid fatality reviews to identify children that are being impacted, and helping ramp up the recommendations that come out of the opioid fatality review so the DEC Alliance can adopt those and make immediate changes within the community to help support the children and the families.
All very important. So people listening to this, how do they know if they have a DEC program, if they need one? Is there a way to make
that connection? Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody needs a DEC program. Or a DEC Alliance. And I truly mean that. Children are everywhere, right? And children are being impacted on a regular basis. And I think every community should have drug endangered children efforts. You can go to our website, which is www.nationaldec.org. And you can go and look on our website under your state. And if you don't see that you have efforts or that hasn't been updated, because we just did relaunch a new website, reach out to us at info@nationaldec.org, and we can definitely introduce you and connect you with local professionals or state professionals that are doing the work.
So people who listen are, you know, people who are affected by drugs or want to learn more into prevention, into treatment, law enforcement. Many communities have like some type of opioid task force, or we have in San Diego substance use overdose prevention task force. So I think a lot of communities already have some type of task force that's working on fentanyl or drugs in some way, especially with all the opioid funding. Communities are encouraged to have that. Do they bring in then DEC to be part of that?
They could. We really encourage them to. They aren't automatically made to bring us in. We are trying to do a better job of making our efforts known, and having opportunities like this with you hopefully allows us to get the word out. But we would love to work with those communities.
Great. We'll be making more connections for you. Other things that you do, kind of, I noticed on your website, you have an app of resources, bags you give to kids, and a lot of different training programs.
Yes, we do. When we got started, we really wanted to get some stuff out there. I've told you a little bit about Camp Thrive. Also told you about our opioid fatality review teams, but we started different things like the crisis bags, where you could go to our website and download the materials to be used. We will actually give you a logo, a Drug Endangered Children logo, for our crisis bags that you can pack that aren't stigmatizing and things like that, that you could put all this stuff in. And the ultimate goal is, what we're trying to do is, when we interact with these children, inside these bags are specific stuff, they're color-coded, but things to help reduce trauma to these kids, right? To occupy their brains, to reduce that trauma that they are experiencing. So we do those. We do have what we call the Check DEC app. The Check DEC app is a free resource. It's downloadable on Apple and Android. You can download the Check DEC app. And what it does is it geotags to your area, and you can find resources that is within 50 miles or however you set the radius within from you to help supply to your families, professionals, or the children themselves. So it's a great tool. National DEC has committed to supporting this app for free because it does give resources out. Our crisis bags do come with a cost.
I put it on my phone. I don't know.
Nice. I love it. I love it. We are working on getting corporate sponsors to help us fund our crisis bags, so we could call you up, doctor, and say, hey, we got a corporate sponsor that has donated X amount of crisis bags. Can we give them to you and your community to hand out to the children? There's a lot of resources out there. We have peer-to-peer support groups at National DEC. We have a ton of resources, tools, and templates that organizations can use. So they don't have to reinvent that wheel, right? We don't want to spend the time reinventing something that another community has done. And that is part of our role at National DEC.
Great. And you've made a lot of impact. I think you showed me 30,000 children just in 1 year.
Our estimate is through the trainings and stuff that we've did, we've impacted over 30,000 children in 1 year. We trained over 6,480 professionals across the United States in 1 year. And we have partnered with over 500 plus state, local, and tribal organizations and partners throughout the country over the last year. So I feel like we're getting some momentum. And I am happy because it's benefiting the children in the United States, which I am very thankful for.
Yeah, and important resources. We talk a lot about resources for people with an opiate use disorder or a substance use disorder, and we don't talk enough about resources for children who are impacted peripherally. And that's why I'm so happy we're doing and having this conversation. And really, as we're talking about the whole drug issue and crisis, we should be including the children who are affected, our next generation, just like you said.
Absolutely. And thanks to you. I mean, thanks to you identifying that and seeing that and giving us the opportunity to have this is you're a hero, and you're a hero in the work that you have done and you are doing. And for National Dec to have this opportunity to be on your podcast is a huge honor. So thank you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for saying that. But I just really learn from the people around me, and I listen. I listen to what you have to say and realize the importance of it. Do you also do advocacy? Like like we were talking on other conversations about all the babies being poisoned from marijuana gummies, the number one cause of pediatric poisonings in America. Do you then take that information and advocate for policies such as, child proof, not just child resistant packaging, or no candies that are marijuana that kids getting into, et cetera?
We definitely advocate when we can and where we can for those kind of things. If we are asked, that is something that I would like National Dec to get more involved in, is advocating for those things, because you brought it up. As we have seen prescription drug abuse, and those being turned into what appear to be candies at times, and we've looked at the edibles of marijuana. Why are we marketing them towards the children? So I would love to have a bigger voice in that and a bigger stance, because the children that are being impacted oftentimes don't know the difference, right? They're not reading the label. They're just seeing it looks
And the
like.
parents don't know, and the parents don't realize.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. That is wonderful. And Eric, as you mentioned, once again, I'll have it in the show notes, but if people want to reach you, tell us your long-term goals and how we can connect.
My long-term goals for National Dec is that we become as well known as DV. When we hear DV, we know we're talking about domestic violence. I want every community, every professional to see when they see DEC, they understand it's about drug endangered children. I would love to get federal funding to be able to support DEC alliances across the United States, that every state, every tribe has funding to support these efforts in their community, so that the children no longer have to be the first impacted and the last ones to receive services, that they can be a part of every conversation. My other long-term goal is that we continue to develop partnerships with like yourself and other organizations to come together and make our voices louder and stronger, because the children at the end of the day made no choice to be here. They are the most innocent victims in a lot of this. And I just want to make a difference for the children and families and the communities across the United States.
Very important, Eric. I'll do whatever I can to help you in those efforts.
I believe that, and I would do anything I could to support you, Doctor.
Thank you for listening to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where you learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. This week's episode would not be possible without the generous support of our sponsor. A sincere and warm thank you to FAF, Families Against Fentanyl. Visit familiesagainstfentanyl.org to learn more. High Truths producer is Dave Rivas from Davey Boy Productions. I am your host, Dr. Ronit Lev. We hope we brought your day a little bit more High Truths.